So forest bathing sounds like you take off all your clothes and you go outside in the woods. And sure, you can do that.
It's an option.
It's totally an option for some people. That's how they want to connect with nature. But for the most part, it's literally, it's a Japanese translation that, you know, is very poetic in nature, but it just means it's this cue to go outside, to bathe in, to bask in the trees, to bask in a natural setting. You know, even if it's just like standing right now today, I mean, we're talking inside right now, but I'm imagining I was outside a bit earlier and I'm imagining the sun just, you know, kind of like beating down and having all this greenery around us. Right now, there's lots of flowers on the trees out in, you know, where we are. So those forest bathing is literally just taking all of that in.
This is the Anthropology Podcast, the podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
Welcome to the Anthropology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As a naturopathic doctor and anthropologist, I optimize the health and performance of badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. You know, people exactly like you. Your business, body, balance, and inner badass. These are the themes we are exploring. So there are a number of items that we will share with our patients and describe as the foundational or core pieces to their health. They include sleep, access to nature, consistent play, nutrient density, mindset work. And of the list of things that we give people to focus on, the nature piece is the one that usually creates the greatest degree of stress. And one of the things we ask people to do is to work towards spending a minimum of 20 minutes a day outside, smelling the rain, feeling the snow, enjoying the sunshine. This is a weather independent request on our behalf to get people to truly get inside and outside and just start to appreciate what is actually going on around them. This can be slightly more challenging in the city, but if you are strategic about it, there's lots of really cool places to be able to access trees and forests and grass and all of the things that nature has to offer. And from a medical perspective, there's lots of different changes that we can measure as a result of people actually engaging in nature. But when it comes to actually doing it, when it comes to being inspired, when it comes to knowing what to look for and how to enjoy the outdoor space, sometimes it actually requires that we go a little bit deeper. It requires that we explore and unpack the concept, and that's exactly what we are going to do today. It is really a pleasure for me to be able to welcome a colleague and friend to the podcast. Dr. Cindy Gilbert is a naturopathic doctor, author, and plant whisperer. She and I graduated together 12 years ago from naturopathic medicine, and she is celebrating the release of her brand new book, Forest Bathing. Cindy has been studying forest bathing and herbal medicine since she first sat under a maple tree and ate red clover flowers as a child. She's a faculty member at the Canadian College of Naturopathic Medicine, and she has taught botanical medicine and philosophy there for over 10 years. Cindy is a wealth of knowledge, and as you will hear from this interview, it is not necessarily as simple as simply going out into the forest. Forest bathing and observing nature can exist on so many different levels. We not only talked about some of the core elements to look for as you are engaging in the forest or going out into the great outdoors, but we also discussed the pheromones that trees release, how this actually impacts your health, the notion of a wood wide web, the role of fungi in actually enabling communication to happen between a variety of different trees. And we talked about this really cool concept that we got into and learned a lot about in school called the doctrine of signatures. Literally, plants will emulate in nature some of the things they are able to do for us physiologically in life. And Cindy went into some really fantastic examples of where we actually see this. This is a perfect episode to be released on the brink of summer. If it will ever emerge for us, it is really an honor, and I'm deeply excited to get into the concept of forest bathing with my friend, Dr. Cindy Gilbert. Dr. Cindy Gilbert, welcome to the Anthropology Podcast.
Thank you. Thanks, Megan, for inviting me. It's great to be here.
Well, this is going to be really fun. We are recording this on almost exactly to the day, the 12-year anniversary of us graduating as naturopathic doctors together in the same class. A lot has gone on since then.
It's true. 12 years is a long time, but we've really, I think, both of us come into our own, and I'm so excited to be getting back together with you at this time of year. It's great.
Well, I'm really looking forward to this interview and this topic in particular, because it's ironically something I've been talking to my patients about, not necessarily exactly like this, but we are talking a lot about the power of incorporating nature into your foundational health routine. And today we're going to get into the idea of forest bathing, and you have a new book called Forest Bathing, and I'm super excited to just pull this topic apart and really go deep on why it is just so important that we are incorporating connection to nature on a daily basis. Now, before we do that, I want to leave people hanging, and they're like, I'm sorry, we're going to be talking about what? Give everyone a little bit of a context, the Coles Notes version about how you got into naturopathic medicine and then how we got to where we are here right now, where you are really literally an expert on how to connect to nature.
Sure. I mean, I think it really all starts, and this is like my Coles Notes, but I'm going to start when I'm a kid. And my Coles Notes of how I got into naturopathic medicine really starts with nature. You know, I grew up in the suburbs, but on the edge of a green space, on the edge of, you know, what really was a hydro easement, but that led into a huge amount of forested area. And then further beyond that, farmland with, you know, quarries and lots of creeks and so many trees and so much water. And we spent so much of our childhood in that neighborhood just wandering around. And for me, that really started with just my backyard. You know, I noticed even as a small kid that I would just lie down in the grass. And, you know, my mom was a very like crunchy mom from the 70s, a little bit of a hippie. And so we were the only suburban lawn that wasn't sprayed and pesticide free. So we had all the dandelions and red clover flowers, and I would eat the flowers right out of the lawn. And then I would, you know, if I needed a bit of alone time, I would take a book and I would go into the cedar hedge that lined the backyard and separated our backyard from the neighbors. And I would climb into the cedar hedge and have this quiet, magical, you know, almost like mystical, mindful moment that I had no idea about at the time. But it was my instinct. And then those instincts are what really ended up drawing me to naturopathic medicine, you know, long story short, by way of environmental activism. And then putting all those pieces together about how does nature, how does the environment, how does that all tie into our personal health and planetary health? And so that's how I got into naturopathic medicine, which, you know, really, at first I didn't realize that I was going to write a book about forest bathing or that I was even going to talk about it. I didn't have the words for forest bathing. Even, you know, when we graduated, because it's a relatively new word and it came from Japan in the 80s. But since then, one thing I noticed with patients was just how disconnected they were from nature. You know, I work in the heart of Toronto and downtown, and as much as there's a lot of green space in Toronto as a city, a lot of my patients would just talk about how, you know, they wanted to spend more time outside, they didn't like sitting in their office all day. And, you know, they were longing for some of those same things that I, you know, really attached to as a kid. And so that's why I felt like it was so important to write this book right now, was because it's something that, like you, I'm talking to a lot of my patients about, is that nature connection, whether they're doing it outside, whether they're going outside of the city, whether they're just, you know, making their way, walking through a park on the way to work, or whether they're just taking a break from their desk and looking at a picture of nature.
Well, and I think that's where a lot of people, I find that so ironic with people, right, is that they'll come into my office and they'll set their phone down and I'll notice that there's this beautiful picture of a tree. And then we get into what has to happen foundationally in their health. And I say, listen, you have to be outside, rain or shine, in nature, smelling it, feeling it, engaging with it at least 20 minutes a day. And then they look at me like I am crazy. But it's actually life-changing for people to have the opportunity to get outside. What the heck is forest bathing?
Okay, so forest bathing sounds like you take off all your clothes and you go outside in the woods. And sure, you can do that.
It's an option.
It's totally an option for some people. That's how they want to connect with nature. But for the most part, it's literally, it's a Japanese translation. that, you know, is very poetic in nature, but it just means it's this cue to go outside, to bathe in, to bask in the trees, to bask in a natural setting. You know, even if it's just like standing right now today, I mean, we're talking inside right now, but I'm imagining, I was outside a bit earlier, and I'm imagining the sun just, you know, kind of like beating down and having all this greenery around us. Right now, there's lots of flowers on the trees out in, you know, where we are. So those forest bathing is literally just taking all of that in. It can be while standing still. It can be while walking. There's no right way to do it. There's no wrong way to do it. It really is, you know, just having that exposure to a natural environment. That's the key. And we know that from all the research that's been done, that you don't have to do anything to get those health benefits. I mean, you can double up and, you know, go for a walk. You can, you know, do exercise outside. You can do an active meditative practice outside and, you know, get double for your amount of time that you're putting in. But 20 minutes of just like sitting on a park bench is actually still going to be good for your health. And that's what's so amazing and powerful to me about it.
I love that you're like, there's no right way or wrong way to forest bathe. Just get outside. But you have managed to write an entire book on forest bathing, which means there's more to it than just sitting outside. So if we were going to take it a step beyond just sitting on a bench, and I'm just going to faith that this audience is like, got it. We got the get outside part. Take us through some of the deeper nuances of forest bathing, some of the ideas that you explore in your book.
Sure. I mean, I think for me, you know, there is that piece that everybody can do it their own way, but there are so many bonus ways to approach it, right? So, you know, there's the exercise piece. So if you're, you know, going for a 20-minute walk, you're getting that bonus exercise. And then there's the connection piece. So one of the things that, you know, is really important to a lot of the people that I talk to is that, you know, sometimes if they're working at their desk and they're sitting on a computer, even if they work with a lot of other people, it can be a really isolating part of the day, or you can feel like you are just, you know, it's you and like a screen and that's it. And so taking that 20 minutes and going outside and just noticing. So that's, you know, the first step I would say of any, you know, kind of basic forest bathing practice is to do this awareness-based exercise. So you notice what's around you. You can, you know, use what I call the five senses exercise. So you use all five of your senses to become aware of your present moment, to look at your surroundings, and to begin to draw in and feel that connection to other things. So as much as I'm like, yeah, if you're, you know, you're at work and you need to get out and you're wearing your high heels, go for it. Go wear your high heels out in the park. I, you know, that's not necessarily what I want to do or what I'm most comfortable in, but I've also done it. And then, you know, get out there, but notice, use your eyes, look around, see what, you know, draws your attention. Maybe it's like some pink flower that you've never noticed before. Maybe you're listening with your ears and you can hear some bird song. And then, you know, actually use your hand. I'm thinking like last weekend, it was a long weekend and it was also my birthday. So
happy birthday.
Thank you. What do I want to do when it's my birthday? In a long weekend, I want to get outside. So I was on this hike. My family knows exactly what I want to do. They're like, we'll take a vacation, we'll get in the car, we'll drive out to like really nice Canadian Shield, because that's where, you know, that's my hard home. So I get out there and I'm on the granite, and for me, I want to touch the moss, right? Maybe other people want to touch a soft leaf, right? But to get that textural, you know, physical sensation, and it brings you right back to center. It gets you grounded in that moment. It just dissolves all of the stress of everyday life and keeps you focused on the here and now. And that's the most basic exercise you can do, but it's the most easy access, I would say, and incorporates basic ideas of mindfulness at the same time.
Yeah, I had the experience last week. I'm working on the launch of a new project, and I had a lot of work to do. So I went up north and I sat in the cottage and I stared out into the forest, and that was what I was looking at as I was writing. And it was incredible to just take breaks and actually walk through the forest. And it wasn't even necessarily what I was seeing. It was what I was smelling that I found was actually so impactful. at calming my nervous system down. And I would get into this state where I'm like, oh gosh, I have so much I have to do. And the first thing I would do was not sort of dangle nature as the reward at the end of doing it. I'd actually go outside before I started it. And what was so cool is I was walking into this state of needing to work completely relaxed, as opposed to positioning the relaxation on the other side. But the key thing I noticed was that it's not like I went out for a hardcore run or anything else. I literally was just smelling it, and my nervous system just melted into it. Why is that? What's going on? Are there like tree pheromones happening, or?
And there are tree pheromones happening. So that's exactly it. And there's two things that you brought up that are like so key to it. So one is the smell, and that comes, you know, from, some people use the word phytoncide. So that's just means like plant. It's another way of saying like volatile oils or essential oils. Most people know them as essential oils, and that's what gives all of the smells of the forest from trees and most of the plant matter. I mean, you're also smelling the earth and the fungus that lives underneath the trees, but you are really bringing in, as soon as you said, I went up north and I was just smelling. All I can smell is cedar and pine and balsam fir. And it's especially with the conifers, they have such a smell that comes off of them. And it immediately calms your nervous system when you are able to sense those smells. It goes, you know, that the smell is connected to this part of your brain that is, you know, deeply tied to emotion. And so for one, it's smell memory. So you have a memory of, you know, having a great time at the cottage, or, you know, you have a memory, even a kind of almost biological memory of that feeling and sense of calm that comes in. But then on top of it, that smell actually is activating your parasympathetic nervous system. So that's the like rest, digest nervous system. And it immediately kicks in with the smell of those essential oils. It, you know, you may even start to feel like alive, right? Like you said, is like, not just, don't just do it as a break. I love that idea. And that certainly, that's part of how I wrote this book, was I would go outside, immerse myself in a natural environment, and then come back in to start writing and feel more inspired than I ever would have had I not started my day like that. And it, part of that is that feeling of calmness, and part of it is just the inspiration of being around so many other living things that are in their element, that are doing their thing, that are being exactly how they're supposed to be. And then that inspires you and actually like resonates for you to be exactly how you're supposed to be as well.
Well, I just love how small it makes me feel.
Yeah. I mean, it's, the universe is so big, and that's what it reminds us of.
Right. And actually, there's days where I quite enjoy being insignificant in the grand scheme of things, because it means you can try things and fail at things and do it. Like, it doesn't matter. That's what I find so powerful about nature, is I actually just feel like it squashes that fear of failure, because it tries and it fails at things all the time.
All the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it just keeps going. I mean, that's the lesson from trees in general, right? Is that, you know, they go through seasons, they lose all their leaves, they have to change direction all the time. You know, they're following the sun, but then some other tree kind of beats them out and, you know, outcompetes them to get the sunlight. So they have to, you know, switch gears and completely do an about face and find a new path. And that's part of their resilience that I think is a gift that they can give us when we hang out with them.
Are there different ways to forest bathe depending on the season?
I mean, absolutely. You know, the springtime is pretty wet and rainy, and, you know, it's a great time for connecting to new growth, to connecting to new ideas, right? Because that's what's happening in nature. And so when you're observing, you know, it's like very thorough, but when you spend all that time outside, and if you, especially if you use like a sit spot meditation, which I write about in the book, where you go back to the same spot over and over again, then you start to notice the seasons and the seasonality of us. We have, you know, we have cycles through day and night. We have cycles through months or lunar months. And then we have cycles through years and through seasons. So spring, you know, when all of the flowers are started blooming and the trees are budding, it's a great time to connect with that sense of renewal. In the fall, on the other hand, is a great time to forest bathe and think about, you know, what it is that we can let go of. And there's tons of, you know, work that people can do to say, you know, what is it that I'm holding on to that maybe I don't need to anymore? You know, maybe that's a negative thought I have about what it means to fail, like you were talking about. Or maybe it's some, you know, story I have about how I am in the world. And that can be a great time to focus on that. In winter, you know, I love forest bathing in winter. I love listening. You know, you do something different, right? Maybe it's the listening and smelling isn't necessarily the same. The smell might be the same smell of conifers, but there might be the smell of fresh snow or that sound. This is what I obsess about in the wintertime forest bathing, is the sound of the snow crunching underneath my boots.
I know that sound well. Yeah.
So you take that step and you're just like, you hear that sound, and it just, again, it just brings me, you know, straight into this kind of space of calmness. So I think, you know, that can be really individualized, because so much of that is about how you personally connect with it. You know, I know another way, you know, for me in the wintertime is like, which I won't necessarily do at any other time of the year, I spend so much time looking up and just opening my mouth and letting snowflakes fall in.
It's also just connecting to that inner child and the notion of play. And that's another concept that I'm really quite adamant about with respect to my patients, is that you learn how to play again, and you learn how to engage and make space for unstructured time in your existence. And I love saying create unstructured time to my patients, because you literally watch them move into a state of full-blown panic attack.
You know, they're like, what is that?
Why would I do that? Why would I ever unstructure my time? And in my head,
how is that going to be productive to me is often the look I'll get.
Right.
And the magic is that that's actually what helps us to be, you know, not just more resilient. And this is, you know, what is great about kids outside in nature, but it helps us to, you know, be more efficient and more productive when we come back into those spaces. But it also teaches us how to take risks, how to play around with new ideas, how to, you know, think through a problem in a different kind of way. And, you know, that's one of the reasons I love forest bathing with kids. And I always, every time I have a forest bathing event, I'm like, please bring children, because there's so much that we forget as adults about that magic of being a kid and, you know, just laying in the grass or hiding in the cedar hedge or what those kinds of, you know, kicking leaves, right?
Totally. I put my kids outside last weekend. I say it like it was a chore. They wanted to go outside last weekend. And I was finishing up some stuff inside before we went. We were going on a shaga hunt. And I yelled out to them. I was like, hey, guys. And I wrote about this on Instagram. I said, how's nature going? And I said it like half jokingly. And they were so excited. They yelled back. They're like, Mom, this is amazing. We know how to do all the nature things. And really what they knew how to do is they just instinctually engaged with it. They were like sliding down the hill on pine needles. They were throwing rocks into the lake. They were climbing on stuff they shouldn't have climbed on. But they were really learning how to engage with their environment in a really tactile and strategically, on my part, unsupervised way. I mean, I wasn't laying play in the cold lake by themselves, but you know what I mean? Like I wasn't hovering over them. I wasn't scared they were going to fall out of a tree, because they very well could have. But I was actually okay with them exploring the limits of their environment. And what was really cool is, as I kind of watched them when they didn't know I was watching them, is that as they explored the limits of that environment, they actually also understood what they were.
Yes. And I mean, that's one of the beautiful things, like, I think that we can learn, that certainly kids get out of being in nature, but adults can get that too, is, you know, how to both like respect the environment that you're in, work with it, have fun with it, and understand your own limits, you know, kind of challenge yourself to move past them. I'm always thinking about, you know, my kids, when I watch them in their unstructured, anytime we're in a creek and there's like a fallen log, they're like, hey, can we cross that, right? How far can I jump from this rock to another to cross this stream, you know, in the springtime? Or, you know, what can I climb in a safe way? And I think, like you, you know, it, not only are you building independence in children or in yourself when you do those activities, but you're building confidence, because you're letting the kids kind of explore their environment, feel, you know, gratified, understand what it is that they can do. You know, I know last weekend, we were crossing a stream literally, and there was like maybe one rock right in the middle, and it wasn't, you know, terribly big. And one of my kids was like, screw it, I'm just going to jump the whole width, and took a run for it. And, you know, even me as a parent, I was like, I don't know if that's such a good idea. You're going to get your whole like foot soaking wet. Those waterproof boots only go up to the ankle, right? Like,
yeah, all the things are irrational.
But I caught myself in that moment. And I was like, you know what? Just like I would want to let myself have that moment to be able to just go for it, I wanted to let my kid do that. And then, you know, he did it. He was able to cross it, and he never felt better, right? It's that unstructured play that gives us those moments of, you know, just ultimate satisfaction with like a giant high five on the other side. I did it.
Yeah, it's totally amazing. And then they often surprise us, which is super cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's just like unending things that you can get out of being outside, really.
Well, I want to explore a little bit this idea of the energetics of the forest, because I think there's multiple layers upon which we can consume it. One of the things we talked about last weekend when we were out hunting for shaga, which turned into quite the hunt, death-defying at times. Yeah, found one.
Amazing.
One. However, and we went to great lengths to discover it. But it was the cycle of life. And we talked about that. We said, you know, listen, there's this shaga and this fungus growing on this birch tree because the birch tree has died. And that's the role of fungus. The role of fungus has helped to return living things to the earth. And the kids were like, just so amazed that we had, you know, trees popping through the ground and then trees being consumed at the same time. And that was one layer of the energetics of the forest. But, you know, as we alluded to, this idea of pheromones, I think I'm also so fascinated in the conversation of, you know, the consciousness of trees and the communication of trees and the energetics of a forest. Can you just take us there a little bit in terms of introducing people to that idea?
Sure. I mean, I think, you know, the one entry point is the one you already mentioned, right? Like, so, you know, a lot of people, we think about fungus as being this, you know, piece of like a connection to composting, right? Or almost to that life cycle and that piece of energetics. But the fungi in the forest have so many roles. And one of their actually main role is less about decomposition than actually about communication. And we don't often know that. It's something that we're, you know, really just starting to wrap our heads around. But the trees, you know, that feeling of sense that we feel if you stand in the middle of a wooded area or even in a like grassland, and you feel connected to everything around you, is literally because there is fungal networks underneath your feet in the soil that connect one tree to the other tree and help move sugars and other nutrients back and forth through the soil between the tree roots of different trees, even from different species and different plants, and actually help them to communicate one another. It's literally like I'm really bad at remembering people's names, but somebody coined this as what they call the wood wide web, which I love. Because it really is, you know, everything, every piece of information in the forest travels underground through these fungal networks. And, you know, it's how trees can kind of, they also can communicate like where the water is, where nutrients are. They send information about predators that way. And these plants are all connected. We just standing there on the ground, especially if you take your shoes off, if you are okay with that. But as soon as you connect with that, you're also having that same interconnected energetic experience. And, you know, then that's one kind. There's the other kinds, which I love, which is, you know, once you kind of get to know it, and this is like the kind of nerdy naturopathic moment, which is, you know, there's the basics of forest bathing, a lot of which has to do with conifers, but we can kind of take it a step further and say, okay, what about other kinds of aspects? What are the other things we get out of them? And, you know, again, sometimes I turn to my kids, like we all do, I think, who have children, because I learned so much from them. And there was this huge willow tree around the corner from our house. And it had, you know, it was like untamed. Nobody had come. Nobody had cut a branch off or trimmed it in like 50 years for sure. And they looked at it and they're like, I wonder if there's monkeys in that tree. And from that moment on, they referred to, this is like started when they were like 4 and 3. They just called willow trees monkey trees. And every time they passed by a willow tree, they would like want to grab on. You know, if you think about like a weeping willow, right? You grab onto one of those branches and swing. And especially, you know, if you don't weigh too much, you can swing for quite a ways and you can swing back and forth. And it's an amazing tree for play. But at the same time, when I'm looking at it, you know, I'm thinking, wow, this, you know, this tree teaches me about, this tree can teach me about flexibility. And that's how we use it botanically. So this is like the nerdy piece of it, right? If you think about what we use white willow bark for, white willow bark mainly as an herb is used for pain, to like calm pain down that's like from, you know, back pain or knee pain, right? Pain of like creaky joints, you know, that you're having trouble moving around.
Aspirin pain.
Aspirin pain, yes. Even though aspirin wasn't actually made from white willow bark, it does contain similar compounds, and it is amazing at, you know, think it's sort of increasing the flexibility of our physical body, but of like our whole mindset as well. And yeah, I think back, I had this patient that I was working with who had back pain and was describing this back pain. I was, you know, I always ask people like, what does it feel like? And he said, oh, my back pain feels like planks of wood. And, you know, he was like, yeah, like if you're like, and he had actually gotten this back pain from sanding the wood floor, but it felt to him like these planks of wood. And so we were playing around, you know, with this idea. And this is, you know, to me, like how to take forest bathing to the next level was, I was like, okay, great. You know, in addition to just like moving around and walking around and, you know, in the park close to home for 20 minutes just to get a little bit of gentle movement in, which is always good for chronic pain. I was like, you know, find a willow tree, go hang out with it, let it teach you about flexibility and understand its flexibility. And that's the other piece of that, you know, the other side of energetics that we can get out of the forest is, you know, really thinking about what does this tree do for me? You know, cedar does something totally different. If you think about a cedar tree, it's really straight, it's really tall. You know, it's the tree that I think, you know, in the forest is like all about standing your ground, right? Setting up good boundaries. And it's those, they're like life lessons. You know, the forest is almost like the best life coach you could ever have if you just kind of watch how trees grow.
I love that you're bringing up this concept, which I think we learned about and you've likely explored further than I have in this notion of the doctrine of signatures. So this idea that plants literally look like the role that they can play medicinally or agriculturally for us as people. And I loved learning about this concept because for me, it just created this even deeper appreciation for the natural world and what plants can give us. Because I mean, it's really easy to just benignly rip a dandelion out of the garden and not appreciate the role that it can actually play medicinally. But can you give people a few other examples of where the doctrine of signature is just really, is really obvious? And it doesn't have to be necessarily in the forest. I just think the concept is really so cool as a really quick way of prompting us to connect to nature and our food and our environment.
Sure. I mean, I think, you know, there's other examples in the forest. Another one that I, you know, really like is hawthorn. That, you know, I find a lot, it's been planted a lot in Toronto parks. And, you know, hawthorn has, we kind of use it again medicinally. We often use it for like as a heart tonic for preventing and, you know, working with people with high blood pressure or heart failure. And that's actually super well studied for heart failure and preventing progression of heart failure from one stage to the next. And if you, you know, think about hawthorn, I don't know if you like are familiar, the berries of hawthorn are like bright red. They, you know, have this bright red color that stands out. They almost have, you know, this kind of roundish color. And then aside from these berries, the hawthorn tree also has spikes. And the thorns on it are so long that, you know, literally, if you look at them, I always think about them as like, they're almost like spears. You can hurt somebody. And if you are not aware of it and you're like walking into a hawthorn tree, you could end up pricking your finger and to the point of bleeding. And so to me, that's another side of that doctrine of signatures, is that, you know, you've got this bright red color, you have these like thorns that almost can prick you to bleed. It's like both a great memory cue, but also this like sense, again, like you said, that doctrine of signatures, that this, here's the plant and it's telling me what it's for.
I love this. I just really love this idea, because I think I don't think we appreciate plants. We appreciate flowers, but I don't think we actually genuinely appreciate the diversity and bounty that is available to us as a result of the plants that are just readily available in our immediate environment.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a huge reason why, like, I replanted my whole front and backyards, I guess like maybe 6 years ago, in my little tiny postage stamp of yard in Toronto. But I replanted them all with some of the plants that are native to Ontario, both because I love bees and I want to predict butterflies and bee populations in our city and birds, but also because there were a whole bunch of plants that I didn't really know how they grew, and I wanted to watch them and hang out with them. And so like my other favorite example is skullcap, which, you know, you're not necessarily going to find in the forest, but you certainly find it in my front yard. and you can't find it around. And it's something that we use, for like calming the nervous system, right? It's great for anxiety. But one of the specifics about it that I love is that if you watch skullcap, it tends to have this almost like a small twitch. The plant is so sensitive to even the tiniest amount of wind that it, you know, flickers back and forth. So the leaves do that, and then the flowers will do that. It almost has this kind of ongoing twitch. And then if you read about, you know, how, like, if you think about it beyond just as a general anti-anxiety plant, it's great for those small muscle twitches that come along when we're feeling anxious or nervous about something. So, you know, a lot of people experience this. You get that like little, I'm sure you've had this, that little eye twitch that you can't quite get rid of.
I have had that.
Yeah. Everyone has had that little eye twitch, and skullcap is great for it. And then you can see that mirrored in the plant. And, you know, lots of plants have this. And going forest bathing has been a great way for me to start to learn about those pieces about our tree medicine.
Any cool apps that people can bring along with them? Don't roll your eyes when they
are rolling my eyes at all
when they are first starting forest bathing. Because I have to say, on the weekend when we went foraging, and I gave the kids like six things they had to find in the forest, they're like, "This is better than a treasure hunt." And it was actually really fun to try to go looking for them and find the kind of plants that they would hang out close to. And it was literally like a treasure hunt, but I didn't have to do any work. So are there some apps that people could use as they're like, okay, cool, I could go in the forest, but let's gamify nature as we ease me into connecting to it again?
Yeah, I think, I mean, the reality is there's so many things you can do. And, I'm not rolling my eyes at all, because literally last week I was like, I'm making a forest bathing playlist.
Okay, great.
So I don't roll my eyes at any of this. I am the first one to break out. And my ultimate favorite app is the Cornell Bird app, because birds, I'm just getting into birding. It's something very new to me. I spent like most of my life looking at the ground and like learning all about the plants that grow close to the ground. And I'm great at identifying those. I know all of them by name. And then I learned all the trees. And then I started learning all the mushrooms and fungi and the lichen. But birds were like the last thing for me. I have no idea why. So the Cornell Bird app is great because it's a fun game that you can, if you are able to see a bird, you can literally say, I saw this bird here with these colors, and it was this size. It was like smaller than a robin, but bigger than a sparrow. And it will give you a list of birds that you might think it might be. And even there are links to like listen to the sounds and the calls and the kind of most common noises that you might hear those birds make to help you identify it. So I think that's a super fun app. Any app that does mindfulness, whether that's like the Calm app or any 10% happier, whatever kind of meditation app you might have, is a great tag along, because you can bring it, you can go for a walk, you do a walking meditation, you can just have a seat on the ground and do it, and find something, you know, that just encourages you to breathe in and become aware of your surroundings. And then there's a ton of those plant identification apps that you can play around with. It's hard. Maybe I'm going to be inspired after this, that I, you know, make a specific forest bathing app. I haven't seen any yet, unless you know one, Megan.
I know of a new business venture for you is what I know about.
That's what I'm just hearing about and figuring out. Thank you for that little nugget today.
And I will say, when I was in the forest last weekend, I threw on a heart rate variability monitor. And it was really cool to see how high that heart rate variability went, which is what you want when you're in a, for those of you who are like, what do you mean your heart rate went up in the forest? I don't mean my heart rate. I mean my heart rate variability. And higher heart rate variability is correlated with an increase in your parasympathetic nervous system. And my heart rate variability went like way up when I was in the forest. So it's just another way of quickly hacking the system and getting the system to calm down. All of these things are usually available to us. You don't necessarily need technology and expensive supplements if you're willing to actually engage and get outside. Hey, fellow go-getters. So we've got a lot going on right now over at Anthropology Performance Labs, and I want to make sure that you guys are in the loop. We have groups and contests and quizzes and meal plans and all sorts of things that you can get your hands on. And the best place for you to be in the know is actually to ensure that you are following and hanging out and engaging over on the gram. My personal handle, which is at Dr., that is Dr. Megan Walker, is where most of this activity is currently taking place. And so I'm going to invite all of you to come on over and to follow and to play along. This way you can engage with our weekly guests, get direct links to some of the things that they're talking about in our show notes, and have access to some of the coolest new quizzes, ideas, and games and links that we have in the pipeline over at Anthropology. Head on over to Instagram, hit follow, and let's keep in touch. My handle over there is at Dr. Megan Walker, and let's keep the conversation happening. I think this is a really cool place to transition to the second component of the interview. And this portion is called our key performance indicators, or KPIs. So just like we have them in our businesses, I believe that we have them in how we live our life as well. So I've got a few quick rapid fire questions for you if you are ready.
I'm all set.
Okay. Number one, who is inspiring you right now?
Oh gosh. I am currently inspired by so many people. But I've been, you know, looking at a lot of literature, and I'm reading The Overstory, which, you know, is not necessarily it's a fictional story. It's set in the woods. It has all the magic and mysticism, and it's a great companion to forest bathing. And so that's my biggest inspiration right now. But I am an avid reader, so I'm constantly changing. Ask me tomorrow and I will have a different person.
I love it. What is your audacious goal for the next year?
Oh, to travel and be in as many different forests as possible.
What is the one thing you are most consistent with respect to your health?
Being outside. And like that to me is like consistently tied with exercise. It's like the biggest lesson I learned. I had horrible after my second was born, and, you know, in part totally because I had kids way too close together. And so I had two pregnancies and like nonstop breastfeeding for 2 years. And I fell into horrible postpartum depression, and having outdoor time and hydrotherapy literally saved my life. So that is something I'll never stop doing.
What is something totally badass about you that people would not otherwise know?
There is too many things to count.
Yes. Love that.
I'm like, what is one baddest thing? So what a lot of people don't know maybe is that I used to have a mohawk as a hairstyle. Oh. I was a bit of a punk rock teenager. And so that's hint of my badassery, I guess.
Okay, that's amazing. I haven't had that answer yet. So that is like, that's going to be ingrained in my memory. Finally, last question for you, Cindy. Entrepreneurism, are we born this way or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
I think everyone can learn to become an entrepreneur. I think that everyone's born with a spark, and most of the time we forget what that spark is or we haven't connected to it. But once you figure out what you're passionate about and how you can bring that to the world, there is nothing stopping you.
Such a great answer, Dr. Cindy Gilbert. It has been a real pleasure to have you here today. Your book is called Forest Bathing. I know people are going to want to pick that up and have more access to you. Where can we send them? And we'll hook all of this up in the show notes.
Of course. So my book, Forest Bathing, is available through St. Martin's Press. You can buy it anywhere books are sold, online, through me if you need to. But I'm sure we will put up all of the links. So wherever you like to buy books, that's where you can get it. And it's available in book form. It's on ebook. And if you are an audiobook person and you want to listen to my book while you're outside,
yes, I do.
You can do that too.
Amazing. I only listen to books these days on double speed. So I'm going to have a fast walk through the forest to get through your book, Cindy. Thanks so much for taking the time to be here today.
If you enjoyed our conversation and would like to hear more, head on over to Stitcher or iTunes and subscribe to the Entrepology Podcast. We would also really appreciate a quick review. When people have their health, they can change the world. Let us keep you healthy and you go change the world.